Hello, everyone. I'm Zimran. I actually work at a database company. So what am I doing here? There's an open source project I'm a contributor to. It's not my creation, but I tried to help out there for a while. Thought maybe there's something I can share, some experience, some thoughts about video editing. So maybe a quick show of hands first, so I get to know you a little bit better. If only given the two options, would you say you're rather an artist or a programmer? So more of the creative side, hands up. Okay, more on the like code side, creating software side. Okay, it's more than I expected. All right. Open source video editing software. There are a lot of programs, actually. This is just a small number, like what you find on FlatUp. And I think also some really great options there. The one project I contribute to is Olive, you see right there. I don't actually know who put it up on FlatUp, because it's like more of a prototype, if you will. When I thought about, okay, what does this landscape of software actually look like? So let's take a quick look at like the whole picture. It's of course the proprietary software. I think the one everyone is most familiar with is probably Premiere Pro. But with the subscription model, it's not very affordable unless you do it for a living, I guess. There's also industry tools, but they are also pretty expensive, and I think there's just way too much things there, too many features for what most people want to do. There are also some free options in the sense of you don't have to pay for them, and then maybe pay for additional features. There's, for example, DaVinci Resolve, which is very powerful, and you can get it as in a free version. It's also like a paid version with more features, but it is like makes it difficult to push an open source software and like get investments for that if there's something that you can actually use that is which is free of charge, has a ton of features, like very difficult to achieve something in the open source space. But nonetheless, there are a lot of tools around there. I think most of them are for Linux, also a lot for Windows. For macOS, I think it's a bit less, maybe because there's also this iMovie, which I think comes with the device basically for free. And there's also a paid software which is very powerful, but still, there's for all the operating systems, there's something. I actually want to focus on desktop software here. I'm sure there's also a lot for tablets and mobile devices in general. But open source software, I think what's great is you can get started at a zero cost. So for beginners, I think it's great for learning. But can you actually stay on that software for larger productions? I don't know. Like the stuff I've done is like a small documentary ones, or some educational content. So also more on the beginner sites, I guess. I think the concerns that I have personally, and maybe you agree, is the stability of the software. I think a lot of times you get crashes. I mean, you get that as well with proprietary software for sure. I think there you have a lot of people looking into these issues. And with open source, I mean, there's a lot of small projects, also a lot of individual projects. So just one person working on it, and I think that's also the case for Olive. It's essentially the creation of one person. The other questions are, can you use it for like an actual, like say, short film? Then you also need some level of performance, which I think a lot of the open source options struggle with still. Completeness, so in comparison to the paid software, I think you get less features, but I think you can work with it. I think a frequent complaint is that the usability is not as good. Like the interface can be confusing, or it's just a bit clunky in some ways, maybe. And I wish there were more people from like the UX design side contributing to these projects. So if you consider yourself a UX designer, then yeah, I would love to hear from you. Then the final issue that I see is a lot of these projects are small, so you don't really know will they remain active. I think sustainability is a big problem in general. Yeah. Let's quickly have a look at some of the software just listed, some of the ones that I know of, and some related software, and like I tried to categorize it a little bit. If you just want to take a piece out of a video file or just basic trimming, there's great options for that. There's also FFmpeg, which is very popular, but it's a command line tool. So I think it's not very ergonomically for making video edits. But there are, of course, a lot of other programs that are more advanced, where you have like this timeline where you can cut your footage, work on the audio, add effects, all that kind of stuff. And then there's also the software, which is interesting, where you have some support for video editing, but it's not the primary goal. Like Blender, for example, has video editing built in. And then there's like VJing software, some of that you could actually use to edit video, apparently. And then there's like software around it that is it can be associated also with video editing. For example, if you want some fancy animations, there's motion graphics tools for that, or for complex compositions. There's tools like Natron, which is like an open source attempt at cloning Nuke, which is like this industry grade software where you have like very complex CG shots. And then maybe also like OBS Studio for recording your screen, which I think is a great tool, even though it's primarily for live broadcasts. I also want to point out that like, this MLT framework, it is interestingly designed for broadcasting, but there are multiple of these nonlinear video editing softwares that basically use this framework to get most of the functionality that you need. But as far as I know, it cannot take full advantage of your hardware, and especially with video, like with 4K. Images and if you have a very high bandwidth, you do need acceleration of your graphics chip. But there's like this back and forth between the processor and the graphics unit, and that can really take a toll, make it very hard to work with this high resolution imagery. Why yet another video editing software at all? The creator is a YouTuber, mostly about retro games and consoles, and I think it was trying to scratch an itch, have something that is open source, but very similar to Premiere Pro, because that's also what he used Vimeo with, as far as I know. And the idea was to become like the video editing software that is like as popular maybe as OBS for recording. And the name stands for Open Video Editor, although I think like the LI in there to make it Olive, it would be an opportunity called Libre, Open Libre Video Editing. And there's this very successful alpha version from 2019, created a lot of website traffic that almost made it viable to have the project get paid via ads. I mean, not great to do it. Like that. Very successful alpha version that people still use today. There's still people showing up on Discord and say, this is the greatest open source video editing software that I know of, which is amazing. Let's have a quick look at how
Yeah, it looks like has like yeah timeline preview effects stack file management. Yeah, then a rewrite started to make it more powerful. Like the idea was to add node-based editing that would give you a lot of flexibility, but I think a lot of people have a hard time understanding how it works. Then also things like yeah HDR support, and then you get into like color management, which is like a very deep rabbit hole. And then yeah, there's this problem with like frameworks for the user interface platform abstraction. Turned out that Qt, which is what all of you uses, has a lot of bugs. Also has where you can see where this complexity comes from when going from this timeline, which is like layer-based, to a node graph. Like if you think about it, it's like different ways of processing the content. You can like categorize it. So like you have these nice stages, which looks quite accessible. But then you see the node graph to do some compositing with it. And this is like this immediate increase in complexity. So yeah, I think this is probably something that should be left in the software and somewhere a bit more hidden for the users that need it, but maybe not for the general audience that is like right in your face. Yeah, some of the highs and lows I want to share. Because it was quite successful early on, there were a lot of expectations and desires, of course, and it could go in very different directions, but it's very difficult to pick one. For example, there are still people showing out on GitHub reporting issues that like they start a software and the screen is all black. The issue is actually their computer doesn't support OpenGL 3.2, which is, I don't know, like 10 years old or older. So you could try to make a very lean tool that supports old hardware, which would be very cool if you could use very underpowered old hardware and still make like a short film. But if you want to do a lot of nice effects, then you kind of can't do that. Then you have to go for something more like Vulkan Graphics API, and yeah, then like you rule out a lot of old hardware. Also with this Qt framework, if like it uses Qt 5, if you would move on to Qt 6, it would mean you don't you can't run it anymore on all the operating systems. Like even Windows 8 is out. I think Windows 10 maybe, and Linux also. Maybe Ubuntu 22 would be the minimum, I guess. So you get it like, yeah, this issue that you don't actually know what people use, but you know for sure there are some people that you would exclude, which is a shame. But yeah. And then there's yeah, every feature you look into turns out like text rendering. It's very a complex topic. It's a rabbit hole. And then it's very difficult to keep your motivation. And I think it's much easier to work on some very well-scoped task, like fixing the builds. Just make sure that it still compiles, because then you can just follow the error messages and get it fixed. But if you want to create some new feature, you kind of have to do some exploring. And there's no quick rewards, I think. And that makes it real challenging, in my opinion. And then also, yeah, financing a project like this difficult because if you tell someone, well, you can spend tens of thousands of dollars, then we can make things happen, and it would be open source, which would be great. But on the other hand, there's paid software where you can get it for like $200, and that's it. You get tons more features, and it's available today. So I think it's a very hard sell. And of course, there's a lot of different open source software, so it's also always a competition between the different ones. On the bright side, there was a surprising amount of community engagement, like people suggesting a new logo, translations, packaging, which I think is amazing. And I think the reason for that is because the entry, the barrier of entry is a lot lower for these things compared to the code. I think with the code, like you have to know this entire architecture, also kind of like the vision, and need to know where are the people working on. And unfortunately, it's a C++-based project with heavy dependencies. It's very difficult to compile it yourself if you're like very new to this. So, but there were also a lot of bug reports. That's also a contribution, of course. Many feature suggestions, and a few code suggestions, and what I would like to see is, of course, more activity in the project, because I think that is what, if you have some momentum, that is what keeps this project going. Yeah, that is a great motivator if you see then things move along, but unfortunately, it's not always possible. Yeah, so time's up, so just a quick outlook of sorts. So what do you actually need? Like these things, like a renderer, audio system, user interface. That sounds a lot like what game engines offer you. And there's actually the idea to like start over with Olive, use a different basis, and that would be Godot, because that offers basically all of that. And like it even has an interface for a node graph. Maybe there's a lot of new opportunities to make it easier to build, hopefully. Because and then also like get a lot of the features that are already there, like this node graph, because previously you had to do all of that yourself. Yeah, so yeah, maybe you have to stand on the shoulder of giants here. Yeah, so maybe there will be a reboot. And in fact, I know there's actually another project already where someone tries to build a video editor using Godot called GoZen. So yeah, one more option, which I think is great, and I hope there will be eventually one really great software that everyone likes to use. Yeah, thank you. Any questions? Yeah, so whether Qt like Krita uses would be viable as the basis?
So it might be a good idea to like check out,
and yeah,
I guess KDE Live should probably have some ideas too.
Yeah. I'm sure Olive could benefit a lot from the experience from another project like Krita, regarding especially Qt. Yeah, but I mean I didn't show it here, but I once wrote a very long list of issues because someone asked in the chat what all the issues we encountered with Qt, because they never really had any issues with it, and it was quite a comprehensive list and like hard problems. And yeah, I'm still kind of surprised, because like at the core Qt is like this UI framework, but it seems to have a lot of limitations for UI and a lot of bugs. And then moving to Qt 6, that would exclude some systems again. I know that Krita has like these patches for HDR, for example, and So I think, yeah, that there's a lot it could benefit from. But it would still be like this heavy dependency that you have to compile for over an hour. So I wish there was something like more minimalist that you could compile very quickly, like I think like in the Rust world or with Zig or whatever. You could make it so that you clone the code and you run one command and it compiles everything. That would be so great for contributions, because I think there were quite a few people that tried to contribute, but they got stuck like compiling Qt and having issues with like CMake, so that pointed to the right paths. Just yeah, so like a lot of barriers to contribute code just because you have to compile it. So I'm not sure if like C++ whether that's like a good choice of language if you're like a very small project and kind of have to rely on external contributions longer term. But yeah. Yeah, but great suggestion.
Yeah, I wonder if it's not a bit of a romanticization of development, because I think any platform has bugs, basically. And I'm not sure if like rebooting all the time is the best way to go forward, and maybe just accept that things take time. And like, I don't think it's a bad idea to target very fancy features, nodes and everything. It's just accept that maybe just, yeah, it will take years and it just take time and it's difficult and probably that's okay. And yeah. And I'm not sure that rebooting with another platform and then you will just have new bugs, basically.
Yeah, I think that is very true. This rewrite for 0.2 took many years and then eventually got stuck because of complexity and like time constraints, right? Maybe there's a place for something that is like very limited, but then also very robust, because I think that is very important. If you have something that is like very performant, like then we need like this integration with the compositor and the hardware acceleration. So if you can get that right, that is already a lot of work. But then yeah, maybe just have like a basic timeline, forego effects entirely, perhaps. Maybe that's an idea, yeah. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. All right. I think that's it.